highly recommend
it. Will it beep when it's done?
It's recording.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Robert. I'm a compulsive overeater and a food addict.
Hi, Robert.
And I'm nervous. I got no food in this. I said I could do it. And as the day approached, I got more nervous and nervous. It's one thing to sit in my home group down in Manahawkin and talk for 15 minutes than it is to come up here and speak. So,
you love me, Robert.
That is, to me, look, that's fellowship, right? We do. No, none of you guys are going to hurt me or harm me. No one's going to throw anything at me. I can come out with a smile, and you guys are going to say you love me. So that is, to me, is true recovery. So thank you for that. And I'm going to do my best. Can you hear me already? I have a big mouth. I usually don't do this. Whenever I speak, I usually just let it come out. But I felt I had to prepare today, so I have a cheat sheet, all right? It's in my handwriting. No one else can read this. And I'm going to start. I have to start 20 years ago. But don't worry, I'm not gonna give you a 20-year history. 20 years ago, February 28th, 1995, I was at my bottom with alcohol and drugs and food. I was laying on my living room floor, over 300 pounds, wishing for death. I had the doubt so bad. Not only could I not put a shoe on, I could not walk, and I could not no longer work because of my addiction. In March 2nd of 1995, which was in a few days, I went to rehab. So in a couple days, and I don't pronounce it yet, we still have a few days to get to, I will have 20 years clean from alcohol and drugs. I say that. Thank you. I say that because if I didn't put down the alcohol and drugs, I would have never have been able to then put down the food. So this is where, and it's amazing to me that 20 years later, I am at OA Unity Day 2015, and I'm sharing all the gifts that I have from recovery. So I always say that AA and NA saved my life. I get in trouble with alcohol and drugs. I get DWIs, I end relationships, I get arrested, I lose jobs. Food doesn't do that to me. Food makes me fat, and people say you're a gentle giant. Oh, you have big bones, you can handle it. I say this all the time. I think as a man, I am discriminated against less with my weight than women are. No one has ever really made fun of me for being fat, except for a few times when I'm being a shop right. Our food service outright me, buying big food, and I would have a little kids point at me and laugh, along with a big fat man. But for the most part, I worked a good job. I went all through college and graduate school, clean from alcohol and drugs, but binging on food, and no one ever said you wouldn't be a good candidate for what you do. Alcohol and drugs would have taken that all away from me. So, for me, the food is trickier. For me, the food is more baffling and cunning. So I say that OA rounded out my corners. OA, putting the food down, made me the man that I was always supposed to be. It gave me clarity of thinking. I came for my vanity. I wanted to lose weight. And I saved my thinking. You know, we have a saying today, I came for my drink and I saved my thinking. Same thing applies in OA. I came because I wanted to lose weight. Wow, this is what clear thinking things like when I don't have sugar and flour in my system. Food was always important to me from the time I was a little kid. I am my mother's youngest child. I am the third of three boys, and I was the biggest. And I heard it all the time. I just have a couple pictures I'm going to show. And you can see how tiny my mother was. And we would all, I was almost 400 pounds at one time. You'll see the picture. And I would be somewhere with my mother, and my mother would say, this is my baby. And people would look at me and say, that was inside of you? You pushed that out? And that was the joke. So I always ate differently. I always wanted more. I always tried to mask my feelings with food. I always wanted to be invisible. And when I would get, even as a child, I would overeat on food, I would get food drunk. I didn't know what it was, of course, at that time. That was my escape. I grew up in, an abusive household. My father was a drunk. My father liked to beat not only the kids, but my mother. My mother was lovely. If she knew about Al-Anon, she would have went to Al-Anon. My mother was of the generation where you got married and you stayed married regardless of why. I came along, my mother was almost 45 when I was born. Oops, here you go. And you know, kids, you know, my mother said, you're lucky we can't move close to you. Of course, by the time I came along, they were done. You know, my brothers are not that much older than me. They're a good, decent amount of years older than me. So food was very important to me. And now I'm going to show my pictures, and I'm going to talk about something that everybody has heard about when I tell my story. So, do you want to see it, Joan?
I'll
put one here.
Yes.
I'm going to put one here. I have a before and an after picture on each side. The after pictures are in black and white, only because my friends are broke, so no one can read into it. This picture here, I'm going to show, that's me and my mother. That's 2004 at Universal Studios in California. I'll pass this around. My mother made that shirt for me. My mother was a seamstress by hobby. Not by profession. And when you say that, many people sew. I don't think people know how well my mother sewed. She could make jeans, she could make flannel shirts, she could make wedding gowns. She had a whole room set up with, if anyone knows about fax machines and sergers and all of that. And I was, from the time I was a child, my mother would say that I was too big to get clothes from a regular store. I wasn't. If I wanted to show more pictures, you'd see I was too big to make, but I wasn't that big. So my mother always made me clothes. Well, I eventually got so big that my mother could only make my clothes. That's the shirt that she made me. So my mother and I in California, 2004, we're in California in 2004, and it's October, and it's rainy and cold, and I can't go to any store to buy a jacket or a hoodie or anything like that because I was wearing a 5X. At that time, I was wearing a 4X shirt and probably 48-inch waist pants. So we went to Universal Studios, and I wanted to go to that expensive gift store, and I wanted to buy a jacket. Of course, I knew I couldn't. And that's when something clicked. I said, you know what? I'm tired of being this heavy. I wanted to lose weight. I wanted to do something. So I didn't do anything right away. We came back, and oh, you know what? I don't want to talk about before we're that. I want to talk about the airplane. Has anyone ever traveled really heavy? They don't like us. And I remember saying to the, and I do think heavy people at last week would actually be discriminated against to their face. You know, I didn't know I was fat, and people had to felt the need, they had to tell me, they would look at me like, oh, please, I hope he's not sitting next to me. Don't worry, I wasn't. I was squeezing my poor little mother next to me, who sat many times next to me on airplanes and buses. And after I lost weight, she would say to me, she goes, I'm so happy you lost weight. I can scram. So I remember going on airplanes, and I would have to whisper, because nobody knew how big I was, to the stewardess, I need a seatbelt extender. And then she would palm it to me, like no one's going to see. And I would wear that. That was our trip out. So I don't know why in 2004 the weight started to bother me. I don't know why. Something clicked. Now, maybe because I was coming up on 10 years in 2005 in AA. I don't know. You know, we have a saying in AA, 5 years you get your marbles back, and then 10 years you learn how to play with them. So we went to California. I told you about the Universal Studios. I told you how my mother made my clothes. I was so tired of going to Casual Mail or what is the King Size magazine. You know they still sell me that King Size catalog. I haven't bought clothes in that for 10 years, and they still send me that catalog. So I hate that catalog. I throw it right away. So now we're going to take it to 2005, August. August of 2005, I'm a 50-inch waist, I'm a 5X shirt, and my 50-inch waist shorts were tight on me. And I knew I had to do something. I was at that jumping off point. I'm either going to stay really heavy, or I'm going to do something about it. So I went to a weight loss, club, whatever you want to call it. And I won't mention the name, but it's the place where they sell you their food. And it worked for me, because it was the first time that I learned portion control. And it was the first time I had to be accountable to somebody. So every week I would go into that lady, she would weigh me, and she would sell me more food. And it worked for me, and I lost 100 pounds in a year. And then if anyone's like me, once I lose the weight, then what do? I stopped the intervention, I stopped the support, and I started gaining the weight back. Now I have to talk about a man, and I can't guarantee every time. There's a man today, his name is Pat, and Pat has passed away. I met Pat when I came in 1995, and Pat in 1996 took me to his house, and his wife fixed me, he was a member of OA, And he fixed me in 1996 my first abstinent meal. He weighed and measured it and showed me what an appropriate amount of food would be, and that I was full. And he took me to an OA meeting. I went to an OA meeting, and you people told me stupid stuff like don't eat sugar and flour and weigh and measure meals. And I said, you people are insane. I can say about alcohol. There's certainly no way I'm getting my food. So, Pat was in my life the whole time. And Pat is such a wonderful, patient man. He waited. He didn't push it. So I lost 100 pounds from this weight loss program. I started putting the weight back on, and I said, Pat, what do I do? You go to OA. Oh, okay. So I went to OA in 2006, and I struggled because, you know, it's mostly women, and I'm unique, I'm different, but I know enough to just keep going to meetings. So I would go every Saturday to the meeting in Manahawkin, and eventually, I don't know if I started to talk to people or if they started to talk to me. I started to get fellowship. And I love fellowship. Fellowship is us. It's this, you know? And I started to work with a couple of people. I had a couple of hits and misses. And I you know, Pat was my OA sponsor. And he, you know, he again, he was gentle. We took flour and sugar out. And I struggled. I'll admit it, I struggled. And I'm going to... I want to make sure we have time to share. I'm going to just say in 2007, August of 2007, Pat lived in Seaside. And I said to him, Pat, I really need to do this formally. Like, what do we do? How do I work a program? How do I work a good OA program like I do with AA? And he says, what you need to give up is, what I gave up is flour and sugar. Are you willing to do that? I said, I am. So he lived in Seaside. We sat in his backyard, August of 2007, and we created my food plan. And I gave up flour and sugar. I committed to weighing and measuring my meals, and I lost 5 weeks and had another 50 pounds. I got down to 200. And I thought that was 200 school. I can live with that. So that's where I was pretty much from 2007 to 2009. I had the weight off. I was going to my meetings regularly. I was calling people. I met my buddy Matt at Unity Day. I've been coming to Unity Day since 2008. I haven't missed one. And I love it because it's numbers, it's fellowship. You let me know I'm not alone. And then in 2009, my mom died. And he assured me that eating would not bring her back. He said to me very clearly, you can't eat. And I did. And I got through the death of my mom. And then, because I don't know why, life is life, in less than a year, Pat died suddenly. And again, I went to, you know, people in OA, and they assured me eating will not bring him back. So I didn't eat. And then we had the hurricane, Sandy. And then I had a relationship end, and I was done. I did not pick up flour and sugar anymore. I knew if I ever picked up flour and sugar, that I'd be done. I would never come back. I knew that. So I have a term that I use. I call it loophole foods. It's food that some people can put on their food plan and they don't have a problem with it. But it's a food that I put it on my program. At first, maybe I had a problem with it, but eventually I did. So by using loophole foods, but still going to AA meetings and maintaining, saying I was abstinent, I gained 40 pounds. What I was doing was I was soothing with that food. Although I slowed the way to measure, I did at times binge on a specific food that I should not have been eating, and it was flour and sugar-free, so it was okay. And then I would, you know, do that whole I'm going to overcompensate and not eat, you know, the next day for it. So I knew I was in trouble. And at a Unity Day a couple years ago, a lady from my group was at Unity Day. We started talking, and I asked her if she would be my sponsor. And that's when I started to get back on track. So, and that's when we realized we had to put that food down. What are you willing to do? So now I want to talk about sponsorship, and I'm going to try to. Because I have been struggling since Pat left. I have a sponsor in AA. I have a very, very strong AA fellowship. I have friends. I have my boys. You know, I have my people. But I didn't have that special person. You know, I didn't have that spot, that relationship I had with Pat. I didn't have it. So And I can't tell you how this person came into my life. I don't know how. But I know I sat next to this lady at meetings in Manahawkin, and I didn't talk to her. The person that was sponsoring me knew her and somehow connected us. And this lady called me one day. I was at a seminar on boards, and she called me and talked to me. That broke the ice. That's right there says something about the importance of reaching out to other people, something I don't like to do because I think people don't want to hear from me. But thank God this woman reached out to me. And we very gently began a relationship, a friendship. And now she's my sponsor. And I say to her all the time, she's, I've been waiting for her. And I can't tell you how this person changed my life. It's different having a woman sponsor. In AA, we're very clear about men to men. We don't have that luxury here in OA. But for me, it worked out well because I was able to let my guard down. I was able to be vulnerable. I was able to let this person know who I was. She's formally been my sponsor since 2014 now, for over a year. I have over a year, 100% tip-top abstinence. No loopholes, no slips, no nothing. Weighted, measured, everything. Because I have to account to her. She has me writing. We're going through the steps a second time. We went through the steps, the OA big book. Now we're going through another book with the steps. I have writing. I call her every morning at the assigned time. I tell her what my food's going to be. I give her my writing, and we kind of plan my day. And the same time I call her, the same time I used to call Pat. I don't know how that happens. And I call her at the end of my day, and I say I made it through today. Mm-hmm. And we do a test set. And if I have to make amends to somebody, we talk about how I can do that. So that is the key for me is sponsorship. I try to work with people. I identify, yes, I'm a sponsor. I'll help people. And I'll tell you a real quick funny story because I want to make sure I get a couple things. And I want to talk more about retirement. If you ask me, people would say to me, how did you lose weight? I would give you a quick answer. I eat less than I eat more. Well, my sponsor now says to me, you kind of should tell people if they ask you. So there's some guy that I know from AA who, around January 1st, came up to me, and I've known him for a number of years. He says to me, Robert, how did you lose weight? So I said, John, do you really want to know from here? And I pulled him aside and I told him. And he comes out, what do you mean to me now? So I wouldn't have done that if it wasn't for the sponsor that told me, I can't keep what I have unless I give it away. And he doesn't know how much he's helped my recovery. And now I'm going to say, I walked into an OA meeting last week or the week before, and someone else I know from AA is in there, randomly. And again, what a connection. You know, when we came up today, we drove up here today together. How nice is that? That's fellowship to me. Fellowship is Teresa, wherever she is, telling me today that she loves me. You know, fellowship is, you know, the ladies. I used to say the ladies in the Manahawkin meeting were all like mothers to me, but somebody asked me to amend that. They're all like sisters to me. So we have such a nice group. We don't have a clique. We're so happy when new people show up. We go out of our way to welcome them and encourage them to come back. If you can do nothing else, anyone here that's struggling, if you don't think you fit in, just keep going to meetings. Eventually someone will talk to you. You know, you become a fabric of the meeting. You know, we need new people. We need people. So, fellowship and service, and they assured me that service is slimming. It's the only reason I'm up here. I don't want to be up here. I think I'm boring you people to death. I think the people that heard my story and are all going to roll in their eyes. I'm only coming up here because I want to keep my weight off. I want to keep the clear thinking that I have. And I do want to give back what was so freely given to me. So anyone that can get involved with service, for me it's important. You know, it takes me out of me. So let's see, where am I? Oh, did I talk about feelings? Feelings, oh my God, feelings. For me, feelings is why I numb myself even in OA. I numb myself feel it, so I don't feel. But now that I have someone that I trust, I can say to her how I'm feeling, where I am. And we're working through some stuff that I wasn't even aware was an issue. So, I have a couple things I want to talk about, then I'm going to end soon. Phone meetings. Anyone, if anyone doesn't know about phone meetings, they're a wonderful, wonderful tool. Again, it's my sponsor that I have now is the one that encouraged me to go on a phone meeting. There's a Sunday morning men's meeting on the phone. I do it every Sunday morning. I like to travel, and I do road trips, and I get on, you can go on the computer, find the phone meetings, I listen to them when I'm driving. I love it. It's so funny, I was so resistant to it. You tell me to do something, I'm going to say, no, give me $1 million. No, I'll give you $1 million. Right away, I'm going to say no. And, but if you leave me alone, and you float the idea there, I'll eventually do it. So that's how gentle my sponsor is. This scoreboard has been telling me for probably 6 months, 8 months to go back to the gym. She hasn't been telling me, she's been suggesting it. And I finally just went back to the gym this past week. Now, if you had told me, or if you made a demand, and you said, I'm not going to work with you unless you do this, I'm going to say, good, don't work with me then. It's not like that. It's very gentle. And I'm going to come back to the gym. I can't tell you how much I hate the gym. I have to look forward to meeting every day. So, and now I'm going to talk about my food plan real quick. I weigh and measure all my meals. I don't have flour. I don't have sugar. I count my food. I eat out a lot at different restaurants in my area. And I know which restaurants are clean. I know which restaurants have the food. Sometimes I have to make the commitment to my sponsor that if I'm going to change my food or if I'm going to choose to eat out, I have to let her know to keep me honest. To me, food planning is very important. I eat breakfast, I eat lunch, I eat dinner, I eat snack at night. I have amounts of time between my meals. That's taking so much pressure off me. I can't tell you. For so long, I thought from breakfast to lunch that I was going to die. I really did. I thought by eating, I was going to die. Again, I was reassured that's not the case. You'll live. You can make it till 12 o'clock. And I have. I tried that. So food plans are very important to me. The steps. I was going to go through the steps real quick, but I won't. How much time do we have left? Am I done?
You have until 10:20.
Well, we want to give people share time. So then, all right, you know what? I want to go through the steps because the steps are so important to me. Real quick, the steps. The first step to me is powerlessness. I can give you examples of powerlessness with food. Eating in my car, spending $50 at a fast food restaurant, stealing food, hiding food, I worked in jobs where they would have food for the clients, for the patients, and I would eat it all. I can tell you all kinds of power. And powerless, I couldn't tell you how I was gravitated towards that food. God himself couldn't stop me from eating that food. That's powerlessness. Step two is the return to sanity. You know, he helped me realize that food is just substance. Food is something that I just need to live. Step three, I do every day. I make a decision to turn my life control over to my higher power, and it takes pressure off. Four and five can be go together. Four, and I'll give you my example of four. Four is I clean out my basement, I pick out big heavy boxes, and five is I fall back down and I get rid of all the cobwebs, and I bring somebody with me and I help them. That's four and five. Six and seven, again, they go hand in hand. What are my character defects? What are my shortcomings? And what am I going to do to overcome it? And now going through them with OA, it was different than when I went through. When I went through a number of times in AA, and I sponsorized in AA, and I take them through 6 and 7. 6 and 7 gave me a little trouble this time. And the character defects were a little different because it's more fueling based. And it's more of me escaping. What other behaviors am I using to numb those? Because I give up food, alcohol, and drugs. Now what else popped up? And things popped up. I have a house full of clothes. If that surprised anybody, I have more clothes than any man should have. No, I have more clothes than any person should have. And so that's something that has to be addressed. So, and then 7 and 6 and 7, 8 and 9 go together for me. 8 is making the list. I don't have to do anything else but make a list of people. And that's okay. And then 9 is actually making the amends and saying, I'm sorry, that's hard. I don't want to tell people that I did something wrong because then you might use it against me. So, and it was again, I just finished 8 and 9 again through OA, and it was different. And there's a lot of things that popped up there that needed to be addressed. Step 10 is, me, I knew they only even worry about it. Wrong. I don't know if anyone else gets annoyed with stupid people. Stupid people annoy me. Especially people in customer service. Has anyone called Comcast lately? I'm sorry if anyone works here. And I had to say to my sponsor, I was rude to someone recently on the phone. And then I almost hung up on somebody because they had, you know, they just didn't speak the way I wanted them to speak. And I prayed about that, that's step 10. And I learned, and it ties to 6 and 7, I'm trying to be more tolerant and patient. 11 is my contact with my higher power. And 11 is I pray daily. I talk to God all the time when I'm driving. I ask him all the time to help me for guidance. I'm a breather. I breathe. And I ask God to help me before I walk into a situation. I was sitting over here just before I did this asking God to please just help me get through the next, 20 minutes. And then 12 is this. It's service. It's carrying the message. It's being willing when someone says to me in AA, you need to lose weight. It's being willing to tell them how. So those are my... That's how I do the steps. That's my philosophy of the steps. One last thing that I'm going to end with is body image. And we have a workshop today on body image. And I'm so happy for that. Because I have now lost 168 pounds. I still pick up 400 pounds. People can tell me how I look. And God bless my sponsors. Somebody put her on a pedestal here at this church, which the woman's a saint. I drive her crazy with my big belly. What did my belly look big? And she's like, don't say it, Barbara. She says, no, what belly? I'm telling you, I think I look like Buddha. And I have to. That's one of my ladies from my wife. One of my sisters, that's great. We are brothers and sisters in recovery. Together we recover. So I have to tell myself what size clothes I wear. I have to say I have to practice positive self-thought. Positive self-thought. I look like a normal person. I'm going to end with this one last thing. I go to the gym now, and I hired a personal trainer because I need my handheld. I'm not going to get there on my own. And the first thing he said to me, what do you want to work on? I said, I want to lose weight. And before I could correct myself, because I'm so used to saying that, he looked at me and goes, dude, you don't need to lose weight. So yesterday, when we were at the gym, we were talking about body image and stuff. And he pointed out some normal-looking guys, like, he looked like him. And I don't think that. But you know what? I'm more likely to believe this guy because I think my sponsor cares about me, so she lies to me, so she can tell me about that. This guy doesn't know me, he doesn't care. So that's where I am. I still try to practice my program every day. Everything, anybody wants to meet me out in the world, everything I talk about, I practice. I am not one of these people that go to a meeting and play up a good storm. I struggle. I do what's asking me, and I just want to get through today. For today, if I don't pick up alcohol, drugs, or food, I've had a successful day. That's my story.